Lone Star Audio presents an unabridged recording of The Last King of Texas by Rick Riordan, narrated by Tom Steckschulte. This work is copyrighted 2000 by Rick Riordan. This recording is copyrighted 2002 by Recorded Books, producer and publisher of Lone Star Audio. When a controversial English professor is found shot to death, Trace Navarre, private investigator and PhD, is the only academic crazy enough to take the post. All Trace has to do is walk in the dead man's shoes for the rest of the semester, which sounds fine, until he moseys into the way of more killings. And now, The Last King of Texas.
Chapter 1. Dr. David Mitchell waved me toward the dead professor's chair. "Try it out, son." Mitchell and Detective De Leon sat down on the student side of the desk, the safe side. I took the professor's chair. It was padded in cushy black leather and smelled faintly of sports cologne, walnut armrests, great back support. Mitchell smiled. "Comfortable?" "I'd be more so," I told him, "if the last two people who sat here hadn't died." Mitchell's smile thinned. He glanced at Detective De Leon. Got no help there, then looked wearily around the office, the cluttered bookshelves, file cabinets topped with dreadlocks of dying pothos plants, the tattered Bayou tapestry posters on the walls. "Son, Dr. Hamer's death was a heart attack." "After receiving death threats and being driven out of the job," I recalled. "And Hamer's successor?" Detective De Leon sat forward. "That was a 45, Mr. Navarre." When De Leon moved, her blazer and skirt and silk blouse shimmered in frosty shades of gray, all sharp creases and angles. Her hair was cut in the same severe pattern, only black. Her eyes glittered. The whole effect reminded me of one of those sleek, fashionable Sub-Zero freezer units, petite size. She tugged an incident report out of the folder in her lap, passed me a color Polaroid of Dr. Aaron Brandon, the University of Texas at San Antonio's new medievalist for one half of one glorious spring semester. The photo showed a middle-aged Anglo man crumpled like a marionette in front of a fireplace. Behind him, the limestone mantle was smeared with red claw-like marks where the body had slid into sitting position against the grate. The man's hands were palms up in his lap, supplicating. His blue eyes were open. He wore khaki pants, and his bare, chunky upper body was matted with blood and curly black hair. Bored into his chest, just above his nipples, were two tattered holes the size of flashlight handles. I pushed the photo back toward De Leon. "You homicide investigators, always so reassuring." She smiled, without warmth. I looked at Mitchell. "You really expect me to take the job?" Mitchell shifted in his seat, looking everywhere except at the photo of his former faculty member. He scratched one triangular white sideburn. The poor guy had obviously gotten no sleep in the last week. His suit jacket was rumpled. His rodent-like features had lost their quickness. He looked infinitely older and more grizzled than he had just 6 months ago, when he'd offered me this same position for the first time. It had been mid-October then. Dr. Theodore Hamer had just been forced into retirement after his comments about the damn coddled Mexicans at UTSA made the express news and triggered an avalanche of student protests and hate mail, the likes of which the normally placid campus had never seen. Shortly afterward, while the English division was still boxing up Hamer's books and interviewing candidates for his job, the old man had been found at home, his heart frozen like a chunk of quartz, his face buried in a bowl of dry apple jacks. I decided against teaching at the time because I'd been finishing my apprenticeship with Irene Manos for a private investigator's license. My mother, who had arranged the first interview with Mitchell, had not been thrilled. "A nice, safe job for once," she'd pleaded. "A chance to get back into academia." Looking down at the photo of Aaron Brandon, who'd taken the nice, safe job instead of me, I thought maybe the whole mother knows best thing was overrated. "We offered you this position last fall, Trace." Mitchell tried to keep the petulance out of his voice, the implication that I could have saved him a lot of trouble back in October, maybe gotten myself killed right off the bat. "I think you should reconsider." I said, "A second chance, absolutely."